Monday. Uncle Gary told me if I really wanted to send the right signals to a girl at school, I might consider updating my wardrobe. He said that wearing a new shirt or new shoes always makes him feel more confident, and it might work for me too. The thing is, I really don't have a lot of new clothes. I'd say about 90% of everything I wear is a hand-me-down from Roderick. Mom would say that's an exaggeration, but all you have to do is check the tags in my underwear for proof. I never really cared much about what I wore, but now Uncle Gary has me wondering if my wardrobe is holding me back. This weekend, I asked Mom if we could go out and get me some new jeans and shoes so I could really look sharp at school, but the minute I said it, I wished I could take it back. Mom gave me a long speech about how kids in middle school focus too much on appearances and how if we spend half the time on academics that we do on deciding what to wear, our country wouldn't be ranked 25th in the world in math. I should have known Mom wouldn't run right out and buy me a whole bunch of new clothes. In fact, when Mom was on the PTA, she started a petition pushing for school uniforms because she'd read some article that said kids who wear uniforms do better in academics. Luckily, she didn't get enough signatures, but word got around that my mom was the one who started the school uniform petition, and there was a stretch of a few weeks where I had to wait a half hour at the end of each day before it was safe to walk home. Since Mom wouldn't take me out clothes shopping, I decided to start poking around the house to see if there was anything cool I could wear. I started by going through Roderick's dresser drawers, but I don't think we have the same taste when it comes to clothes. Skulls and vipers? Not my thing. Uncle Gary told me I should look in Dad's closet because sometimes grown-ups have vintage stuff that looks cool. I've never seen Dad wear anything cool in my whole life, but I was willing to give it a try. I'm glad Uncle Gary gave me that tip because, believe it or not, I found exactly what I was looking for in the back of Dad's closet. It was a black leather jacket. I've never seen Dad wear it, so I figured he must have bought it before I was born. I had no idea Dad owned anything that cool, and it kind of made me see him in a whole new light. I put it on and went downstairs. Dad seemed pretty surprised to see his old leather jacket, and he said he bought it back when he was first dating Mom. I asked Dad if I could borrow it, and he said he didn't need it anymore, so it was okay by him. Unfortunately, Mom wasn't on board with the idea. She said the jacket was way too expensive for a middle school student to wear and that I might damage it or lose it. I told her that wasn't fair because it was just sitting in the closet gathering dust, so it didn't really matter if something happened to it. But Mom said the jacket sent the wrong message and that, besides, it wasn't a winter coat. So she told me to put it back in the upstairs closet. But when I was in the shower this morning, I just couldn't stop thinking about how awesome it would be to wear that thing to school. I knew I could probably sneak it out of the house and put it back in the closet later without Mom even noticing. So while she was feeding Manny breakfast, I went upstairs, grabbed the jacket, and slipped out the front door. The first thing I have to say is, Mom was right about the jacket not being a winter coat. The thing didn't have any sort of lining, and halfway to school, I was starting to really regret my decision. My gloves were in my winter coat at home, and my hands were freezing, so I shoved them in the pockets of the jacket, but there was something in each one. There was a really cool pair of aviator sunglasses in one of the pockets, so that was a bonus. And the other, there was one of those picture strips you get at a photo booth in the mall. At first, I didn't recognize the people in the picture, but then I realized it was Mom and Dad, and they were kissing. I really wish I hadn't seen that right after eating breakfast. When I got to school, I put on the shades, and every head turned in my direction as I walked down the hallway. In fact, I got so much attention that I decided to keep the jacket on the rest of the day. I felt like a whole new person in homeroom. A few minutes before the bell rang to start the day, There was a loud knocking on the little window in the door. I just about had a heart attack when I saw who it was. Mom! When the teacher opened the door, she walked straight to my desk and made me hand over Dad's leather jacket in front of everyone. I told Mom it was too cold outside for me to walk home without a jacket, so she gave me her winter coat to wear. I wasn't too happy about the situation, because beige cashmere's not my thing either. But at least I was warm on the way home. Wednesday. By now, everybody at school has heard about the guy whose mom made him wear her winter coat. So this is going to make it a lot harder for me to find a date to the dance. That's why I've decided my best shot is to take someone who doesn't go to my school to the dance. And I think I found the perfect place to look. Church. I've heard that the students at the church school think the kids who go to public school are pretty tough. So whenever I run into one of my friends at church, I make sure to play it real cool in front of the church kids, with lines like, "What's up, bro?" and "I'm just chillin'." Recently, Mom has become friends with Mrs. Stringer at church because they both worked on the fall fair committee. The Stringers have two kids who go to the church school, a boy named Wesley and a girl named Laurel. I've never actually seen Wesley, so he must be down in the basement with the other little kids during church. A few nights ago, Mom invited the whole Stringer family over to our house for dinner this Friday. I think she's hoping Manny and Wesley will click, and Manny can be friends with a real live person for once. But I can see a real opportunity here for me. Laurel is in my grade, and she's better looking than most of the girls in my class. So this dinner could really change my fortunes. Friday. Mom spent a long time getting the house ready before the Stringers came over. And when I took a look around, I realized I'd better pitch in too. There were embarrassing things all over the place. For starters, we still had our Christmas tree up in the living room. It was too much work to dismantle it, so me and Dad just shoved it in the garage. There were diapers taped on all the corners of our family room furniture that were left over from when Mom baby-proofed the house after Manny started crawling. She used packing tape to hold the diapers in place, and that wasn't easy to get off. Uncle Gary was on the couch in the family room taking a nap, so we just covered him with a sheet and hoped nobody would want to sit there. Next was the kitchen. There's a bulletin board on the wall with different certificates and ribbons that Mom has given us kids over the years. Everything with my name on it is really lame, so I took it off the wall and hid it in the pantry. By the time the Stringers showed up, we'd taken care of all the major stuff. But the visit got off to a really shaky start. You remember how I said Manny was afraid of some kid at church who acted like a vampire? Well, it turns out that kid was Wesley Stringer. So any hope Mom had of Manny making a new friend was completely out the window. Manny skipped dinner and spent the rest of the night hiding in his bedroom, which I wish I could have done because Mom made a fancy meal to impress our guests. It was cream of mushroom chicken with asparagus on top. I know asparagus is supposed to be really good for you, but to me, it's like kryptonite. I didn't want to look unsophisticated in front of Laurel, though, so I decided to just close my eyes, plug my nose, and choke it down. The grown-ups talked about politics and stuff that wasn't all that interesting, and me and Laurel just had to sit there and listen. Mom told Mrs. Stringer about some fancy restaurant she goes to with Dad when they have a date night. And Mrs. Stringer said that she and her husband can never go out for dinner on weekends because Laurel is always off doing something with friends and they can't find a reliable babysitter for Wesley. I told Mrs. Stringer that if they ever need a babysitter, they should call me. I figured it's a way to get in good with the Stringers and get paid doing it. Mom liked the idea too, and she said babysitting would be a great experience for me. Mrs. Stringer seemed pretty impressed, and she asked if I was free tomorrow, so I told her I was. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but I'm sure one day I'll be sitting around with the Stringers on Thanksgiving, and we'll all be laughing about how I used to babysit my brother-in-law Wesley when I was in middle school. Saturday. Tonight, Mom dropped me off at the Stringers' house at 6:30. Mrs. Stringer said Laurel had already gone to a friend's house, which kind of stunk, because I was hoping I might get to see her for a few minutes and talk to her about the dance. Mrs. Stringer said I should put Wesley to bed at 8 o'clock and that they'd be home around 9 o'clock. She told me I could watch TV until they got home and to help myself to anything in the fridge. After Mr. and Mrs. Stringer left, it was just me and Wesley. I asked Wesley if he wanted to play a board game or something like that, but he said he wanted to go out in the garage and get his bike. I told him it was too cold to ride his bike outside, but he said he wanted to ride it inside. The Stringers have a really nice house, and I was pretty sure they didn't want Wesley scratching up their hardwood floors, so I told him we needed to find something else to do. Wesley had a huge fit. After he calmed down, he told me he wanted to color instead. I asked him where his coloring stuff was, and he said it was in the laundry room. But when I went to get it, I heard the latch on the door lock behind me. Then I heard the garage door open, and the next thing I knew, Wesley was riding around the kitchen on his bike. I pounded on the door for him to let me out, but he just ignored me. Next, I heard the basement door open, and then a rumbling sound followed by a huge crash. I could hear Wesley crying at the bottom of the stairs, and I started to panic because it sounded like he was really hurt. But then Wesley calmed down, and I could hear him dragging his bike back up to the top of the stairs. Then he rode down the stairs and crashed at the bottom again, followed by more tears. I am not exaggerating when I tell you this went on for an hour and a half. I thought Wesley would wear himself out, but he never did. I remembered that the Stringers said they couldn't find a babysitter for Wesley, and now that was starting to make a lot of sense. I figured I was going to have to punish Wesley for locking me in the laundry room once I got out of there. What he deserved was a good spanking, but I figured that probably wouldn't fly with the Stringers. I decided I'd give Wesley a timeout, because that's what my parents always did when I misbehaved as a little kid. In fact, when I was little, I even got timeouts from Roderick. The thing is, I had no idea Roderick didn't actually have the authority to give me timeouts. And I can't tell you how many hours I logged in that timeout chair when Roderick was babysitting me. One time, I was throwing a ball in the house while I was home alone with Roderick, and I accidentally knocked over a wedding photo of Mom and Dad. Roderick gave me a half-hour timeout for that one. When Mom and Dad got home, they saw the broken picture and asked which one of us had done it. I told them it was me, but that they didn't need to give me a punishment because I'd already gotten a timeout from Roderick. But Mom said the only people who could hand out punishments were her and Dad, so I ended up serving a double timeout for breaking that picture. I figured Wesley deserved a triple timeout for locking me in the laundry room. But it was getting pretty late, and I knew it would look bad if the Stringers came home and I was still locked inside. So I started looking for another way out. There was a spare freezer blocking a door to the back deck, so I pushed with all my might and gave myself just enough room to squeeze through and open the door. It was really cold outside, and I was only wearing a t-shirt and pants. I tried to open the front door, but it was locked. I decided if I was going to catch this kid off guard, I'd need the element of surprise. So I walked around the house and tried all the windows on the first floor until I found one that was unlocked. I then pushed it open and crawled inside. I landed headfirst in someone's bedroom, and after I looked around, I realized it must be Laurel's. Like I said, it was freezing cold outside, and Laurel had this big, comfy bed covered with stuffed animals, so I decided I needed to warm up before going after Wesley. But I really regret taking a few minutes to do that, because in the time I was in Laurel's room, Mr. and Mrs. Stringer came home and found me in their daughter's bed. Hopefully, we can all have a good chuckle about this story at some future Thanksgiving, too. But I think it's going to be a while before Mr. Stringer is ready to laugh about this one. Wednesday. After blowing my chances with Laurel Stringer, I pretty much gave up on finding someone to take to the dance. It's only 3 days away, and by now, everyone who's going is already paired up with someone else. So I figured I'd be spending Saturday night at home playing video games by myself. But yesterday, Rowley gave me some news after one of his dance committee meetings that changed everything. He said Abigail Brown was upset during the meeting because the boy she was going with, Michael Sampson, has a family obligation and had to cancel on her. So now Abigail has a dress and no one to go to the dance with. So the stage is set for me to swoop in and be the hero. I told Rowley this was his big chance to come through as my wingman and hook me up with Abigail. The thing is, Abigail doesn't really know me, and I kind of doubted she'd go to the dance with a person she doesn't know. So I told Rowley he should tell Abigail the three of us could go to the dance together, as a group of friends. Rowley seemed to like that idea, because he's been doing all this work on the dance committee and didn't have anyone to go with either. I figured the three of us could go out to dinner, and at the restaurant, Abigail would get to see what a great guy I was. By the time we got to the dance, we'd walk in as a couple. The only problem was that we'd need a ride. I wasn't about to ask Mom for one, because the seats in our minivan are crusted with old Cheerios and God knows what else. Plus, having Mom along on my date could be a total disaster. I can't trust her not to say stuff like, "It seems like it was just yesterday that Greg was in diapers." I knew if I really wanted to impress Abigail, I'd need to rent a limo, but those things cost a fortune. Then I had an idea. Rowley's dad has a really nice car, so I figured we could get him to drive us. Abigail wouldn't even have to know Mr. Jefferson was Rowley's dad. If we didn't say anything, she'd just think he was a professional driver. Maybe I'll even get him one of those hats chauffeurs wear to really sell the idea. Of course, we wouldn't be able to say anything to Mr. Jefferson either. Me and him kind of have a bad history, and I'm sure he wouldn't be looking to do me any extra favors. Things started falling into place today. Rowley talked to Abigail, and she likes the whole group of friends idea. And on top of that, Mr. Jefferson agreed to drive us to the dance. So now I'm keeping my fingers crossed that nothing will happen between now and Saturday night to screw things up. Friday. I told Uncle Gary about the dance, and he seems even more excited about it than I am. He wanted to know all the details, like how many people were going to be there and if they hired a DJ. But I didn't know the answers to his questions, because Rowley's the one on the dance committee, and that stuff is kind of in his department. I was more focused on finding something to wear. Uncle Gary told me if I really want to impress my date, I should wear a suit. I went in Roderick's closet and found a suit that he actually wore to one of Uncle Gary's weddings. I couldn't find any cologne in Roderick's junk drawer, but I did find a bottle of that body spray they're always advertising on TV. I was a little nervous about using it, though, because if that stuff really works like they say in the ads, the girls will go wild for me. Tomorrow night could be a nightmare. My great-uncle Bruce passed away a few years ago, and I knew we had a box with some of his personal stuff in the garage. I found a bottle of his cologne and tried a little on my wrist. It made me smell exactly like Great Uncle Bruce, but I figure it's safer than using that body spray. I even asked Dad to take me to the grocery store, where I bought a box of those Valentine's chocolates for Abigail. I never should have taken the cellophane off the box, though, because I've already helped myself to the buttercreams, peanut clusters, and caramels. Hopefully Abigail likes the coconut chocolates, and the ones that taste like toothpaste, because that's all that's really left at this point. Saturday. Tonight was the night of the big Valentine's Day dance, and it got off to a really rough start. When I went over to Rowley's house to get ready, I noticed he had little red bumps on his face that looked like mosquito bites. But then I realized what those spots were. Chicken pox! Ever since Evan Whitehead showed up at school with chicken pox a few weeks ago, it's been spreading like wildfire in my class. This past week, 4 boys were sent home by the school nurse. I'm pretty sure one of those guys was the mad pantser, because there haven't been any pantsing incidents since Tuesday. I've heard chicken pox are super contagious, and whenever a kid gets them, they're not allowed to come back to school for a week. But I couldn't afford to have Rowley out of commission for even one night. He was my ride to the dance, and I knew that if his mom and dad didn't let him go, then I couldn't go either. I told Rowley he had the chicken pox, but I probably should have broken the news to him slowly instead of all at once, because he flipped out. Rowley was going to go straight downstairs and tell his parents, but I told him to calm down and we'd figure this out together. I said if he could just get through the night without telling anyone, I'd owe him for the rest of my life. All he needed to do was cover up his chicken pox and not make a big stink to his parents. We'd both go to the dance and have a great time, and no one would even have to know. But Rowley was too freaked out to think straight, and I had to give him 2 coconut chocolates to quiet him down. Now that Rowley knew he had the chicken pox, he was going crazy with the itching. So I got some socks out of his dresser and put them on his hands. I figured Rowley's mom and dad probably knew what chicken pox looked like, and we had to find a way to cover them up. So we went into his parents' bathroom and looked through his mom's makeup kit to see if there was anything we could use. I found some stuff called concealer, and that sounded about right to me. I used a little brush I found in a drawer and then tried to cover up the problem areas on Rowley's face. But you could totally tell that Rowley was wearing makeup. So I grabbed a silk scarf from the top of Mrs. Jefferson's dresser and told Rowley to put it on and cover up around his mouth. Then I noticed he had a few chicken pox on his forehead. So I found a beach hat in his mom's closet and had him put that on too. I'm not going to say Rowley looked totally normal, but at least you couldn't tell he had the chicken pox. I kind of held my breath when we got into the car, but I think Mr. Jefferson just thought Rowley's getup was some kind of middle school fashion thing, and he didn't say a word. When I opened the back door to get in, I was pretty surprised to find Rowley's old booster seat taking up one of the spots. I asked Rowley why he still had a booster seat in his dad's car, and he said they just never took it out once he got big enough for the regular seat. But come to think of it, I've always thought Rowley seemed a little too tall whenever he drove by with his family. I knew we had to take that thing out before we went to pick up Abigail, because a limo company would never have a booster seat in one of its cars. But you needed to be some kind of an engineer to figure out how to undo the clasp on that thing. By that point, we were already late picking up Abigail, so we had to just leave it. When we pulled into Abigail's driveway, I asked Mr. Jefferson to honk the horn to let her know we were there. But Mr. Jefferson wouldn't honk the horn, because he said that's no way to treat a lady. He said one of us was going to have to go to her front door and escort her. Rowley started to get out, but I realized this was my big chance to make a good first impression on Abigail. So I walked up to the house and knocked on the door. But Abigail didn't come to the front door. Her dad did. Apparently, Mr. Brown is a state trooper. Or he just likes dressing up like one. Mr. Brown said Abigail was upstairs getting ready, and she'd be down in a minute. He told me to come inside and have a seat while I waited. It felt like we were sitting there an hour waiting for Abigail to come downstairs, and I really didn't like the look of the handcuffs Mr. Brown had on his belt. I finally decided this was way too much stress for a Valentine's Day dance and was ready to bail out. But right as I went to leave, Abigail came down the stairs. The first thing I noticed was that Abigail was wearing a really poofy dress, and I knew there was no way the three of us were going to fit in the back seat of Mr. Jefferson's car. But there was no way I was sitting in Rowley's booster seat either, so I volunteered to ride up front. Besides, I knew Mr. Jefferson had heated front seats, so I figured I might as well take advantage of that. Mr. Jefferson had a pile of papers in the passenger seat, because I guess he was planning on doing his taxes or something while he was waiting for us at the dance. It was too much of a hassle to move all that stuff, so I decided to just hop in the way back of the car so we could get on with the night. Abigail didn't seem too bothered by the fact that Rowley was sitting in a booster seat, and I'm pretty sure she thought he was just doing it as a joke. She laughed when he offered her a drink from a sippy cup. But humor is kind of my thing, and I wasn't about to let Rowley steal my thunder. So I whispered, "Psst, Abigail, he's not being funny on purpose." It got kind of quiet in the car, so I asked Mr. Jefferson if he could turn on the radio. But instead of putting on some music, he tuned in to some boring talk radio station. And that's what we had to listen to for the rest of the ride. I'm pretty sure he just did that because he was annoyed I'd called him driver. When Mr. Jefferson pulled over, I thought we were at the restaurant, but we'd stopped at a repair shop to pick up Mr. Jefferson's vacuum cleaner. At that point, I wished I'd just coughed up the money for a limo, because a professional driver wouldn't have run errands on the way to the restaurant. I'd made a reservation at Sprigo's, which is that fancy restaurant Mom and Dad are always talking about. I knew it might be a little pricey, but I'd saved up a lot of money from chores, and I really wanted to impress Abigail by looking like a big shot. When we pulled into the parking lot, Mr. Jefferson opened the back for me. But when I got out, my suit was covered in all these greasy smears from the vacuum cleaner. I didn't want to look like a slob, so I just left my jacket in the car, and we went into the restaurant together. I was hoping Rowley would take a hint and stay back with his dad, but he came right along with us. Sprigo's was a lot fancier than I thought it would be. When we walked in, the host told us this was an upscale establishment, and that gentlemen were required to wear sports jackets. But there was no way I was going to wear my dirty suit jacket, so I asked the host if he could just make an exception this one time. He said he couldn't, but that the restaurant had spare sports jackets I could borrow. The one he gave me was a little big, but I put it on anyway. When we sat down, I noticed a terrible smell and tried to figure out where it was coming from. Then I realized it was coming from me. I guess that loner jacket had been used by 100 different people without ever being washed. I didn't want to smell like somebody else's body odor during dinner, so I excused myself to go to the bathroom and scrubbed the sports jacket's underarms with soap and water, then dried them with the hand dryer. Well, that just made it worse, because the heat activated the BO and it spread. That was it for me. I told Abigail and Rowley this place was for phonies and we should just take off. I left my jacket with a host at the front and the three of us walked out the door. I said maybe we should just skip dinner and go right to the dance, but Abigail said she was really hungry and Rowley said he was starving too. The only other restaurant in the area was Corny's, and I told them there was no way I was going there. But Rowley said he really likes the dessert bar at Corny's, and Abigail said that sounded good to her. I was really starting to regret having Rowley along on this date, because if all he was going to do was take Abigail's side, I'd get outvoted every single time. But I didn't want to make a big deal about it in the middle of my date, so I just bit my lip and we walked 3 blocks to Corny's. Luckily, I remembered about the tie issue before we walked in the front door, and I stuffed mine in my back pocket at the last second. But I didn't have time to warn Rowley, so now his tie is a permanent part of the wall of shame. Corny's was a total zoo. My family usually goes on a weeknight, but it's a whole different scene on a Saturday. The good news was that since we didn't have any little kids with us, they didn't seat us in Children's Alley. But the adult section of Corny's wasn't a whole lot better. All that separates the two sides is some glass, and we got seated right next to a family with a bunch of wild kids. I asked our waitress if we could move, and she made a sour face and took our stuff to another table. But I wish we had just stayed where we were, because our new situation wasn't an improvement. I don't want to go into the details, but a baby was getting a new diaper, and where there's a new diaper, there often is an old diaper. I didn't want to ask the waitress to move us a second time, because the last person you want to make mad is the person who's serving you your food. So I put a couple of menus up against the window to block my view. Our waitress brought us corn chips, and Rowley took the socks off his hands so he could eat. I didn't think it was such a great idea for all of us to be grabbing chips out of the same basket while Rowley had the chicken pox, so I kept it near me. Every time Rowley looked like he wanted a chip, I pushed one to him with a straw. I couldn't remember if the chicken pox is airborne, so whenever Rowley talked, I held my breath, just to be sure. At one point, he told us a really long story about something that happened to him last summer, and by the end, I almost passed out. I told Abigail and Rowley that I was paying for dinner, so they should get whatever they wanted. I was trying to show off a little for Abigail by throwing my money around. But when the waitress came back, Abigail ordered 2 appetizers, and so did Rowley. The waitress couldn't understand what Rowley was saying because of his scarf, though, and he pulled it down to speak. But when he did, a single molecule of spit flew in the air and landed on my bottom lip. I let my jaw go totally slack so the molecule wouldn't get into my mouth. I tried to stay calm on the outside, but on the inside, I was totally freaking out. I wanted to wipe my lip with my napkin, but I dropped it on the floor and couldn't reach it. So I waited until Abigail was distracted, and then wiped my lip on her sleeve. We placed our order, and I asked for a plain hamburger to save money. Abigail ordered the T-bone steak, which is the most expensive item on the menu. And Rowley got the same thing, even though I was trying to signal for him to order something cheap. When our food came out, my hamburger had lettuce and tomato on it, because at Corny's, they always get your order wrong. I took off the lettuce and tomato, but there was mayonnaise on my burger, too. When our waitress came around again, I told her I'd ordered a burger with nothing on it, so she took a napkin and just wiped the mayonnaise off, then left the napkin right in the middle of the table. I lost my appetite after that. I just sat there and waited while Abigail and Rowley ate their steaks, and when they finished, I signaled for the waitress to come over so I could pay the bill. But then Rowley and Abigail said they wanted dessert. The whole reason we came to Corny's in the first place was for the dessert bar, which comes free with your meal. But of course, Rowley and Abigail each wanted to order a special dessert off the menu, which costs extra. I got up and found our waitress to tell her it was Rowley's birthday, because I knew then he'd get a free dessert. So a few minutes later, the waiters and waitresses all came out and sang happy birthday to Rowley and gave him his free cake. Abigail still ordered a triple-layer chocolate cheesecake, which she only took 2 bites out of. When the bill came, I couldn't believe how much it was. I had to use all the money in my wallet, and I even had to pull out the $5 I was keeping in my sock in case of an emergency. The waitress wouldn't take the money I had in my sock because it was a little wet, so I had to go out to the car and ask Mr. Jefferson if he had a $5 bill he could trade. When I got back to the table, Rowley and Abigail were in the middle of a conversation, and it seemed to me like they were sitting a little closer than when I'd left. I thought about giving Abigail a heads up that she might want to keep her distance from Rowley, but I was afraid she'd bail on the date if she found out about the chicken pox. The three of us got back in the car, and Mr. Jefferson drove us to school and dropped us off at the front door. He gave Rowley a big hug, which I'm sure seemed pretty weird to Abigail if she thought he really was a professional driver. The theme of the dance was Midnight in Paris. And I have to admit, the dance committee did a pretty good job. The gym was decked out to look like a street in France. There was a long table set up with punch and snacks, and there was even a chocolate fountain with strawberries for dipping. We handed over our tickets and then got in line for photos. Each couple had their picture taken in front of a backdrop of Paris. When it was our turn, I stood with Abigail, and the photographer snapped our photo. But I wish I'd known Rowley was going to get in the picture with us, because I would have just skipped it. Something about the DJ looked familiar to me, and when I got closer, I realized it was Uncle Gary. Don't even ask me how he got the job. Uncle Gary must have seen it as an opportunity to unload his t-shirts on my classmates. It was dark in the gym, so kids didn't know they were getting ripped off. 1 minute, Abigail was standing right next to me, and the next, she was gone. I finally spotted her on the other side of the gym talking with her friends. I walked over to them, but before I got there, they all went into the girls' bathroom together. I have no idea what it is about girls that makes them go to the bathroom in groups, but something about it happening now really made me nervous. I didn't know what Abigail thought of me, but I figured she was probably telling her friends right at that moment. The boys' bathroom is right next to the girls in the gym, so I went in there and pressed my ear to the wall. I could hear a lot of giggling, but I couldn't really make out the conversation because of all the racket in the boys' bathroom. Flushing, farting, you get the picture. I tried to get people to stop making noise, but it was no use. It got quiet on the other side of the wall, so I walked back into the gym, and Abigail and her friends were over by the punch. At 7:50, Uncle Gary turned up the music, and it looked like the dance was going to get started for real. But that's when some people my grandma's age started trickling in. By 8 o'clock, there must have been 100 of them crowded around the entrance. There was some sort of commotion between one of the teachers and a few of the senior citizens, so I got closer to see what was going on. The senior citizens claimed they'd booked the gym for a town meeting about the new senior center. Mrs. Shear told them she reserved the gym for the dance 2 weeks ago. But the seniors said they reserved it 2 months ago, and they had the paperwork to prove it. The senior center people said us kids were going to have to clear out of the gym so they could have their meeting. But then some of the girls on the dance committee got in on the conversation, and it looked like it was about to get ugly. Just when it seemed like a fight was going to break out, Mrs. Shear suggested a compromise. She said we could put up the partition in the middle of the gym, and the seniors could have their meeting on one half, and us kids could have our dance on the other. Everybody seemed to be able to live with that idea, and the janitor put up the partition. Losing half of the gym was kind of a bummer, but what killed the mood was the lights. There's only one switch for the overhead lights in the gym, and they had to be either all on or all off. The senior citizens wanted them on for their meeting. So that was the end of the Midnight in Paris vibe over on our side of the gym. The bright lights were bad for Uncle Gary, too, because now all the kids who bought Botson shirts from him could see they'd gotten ripped off, and they started demanding their money back. Uncle Gary tried to distract everyone by turning the music up, and a lot of people hit the dance floor. The girls danced in a big group in the middle of the gym. Every once in a while, a guy would try to dance his way into the group, but the girls had formed a kind of wall that kept the boys out. I didn't really understand that until I tried to make a move to break into the circle and got totally blocked. La-chi-cha-chi-cha-cha. No way. One of the seniors came over to our side of the gym and complained that the music was too loud and it needed to be turned way down. So Uncle Gary lowered the volume by about 80%, and then we could hear every word of the senior center meeting.
Let the record show that Mrs. Fishburne has seconded the motion to have a coffee maker in the kitchenette.
That didn't seem to bother the girls, though. A lot of them took out their personal music players and just kept dancing. By that point, most of the boys had had enough. All that time being on their best behavior around the girls had taken its toll, and a lot of the guys just totally cut loose. Mrs. Shear and the rest of the chaperones tried to calm the boys down, but it was hopeless. It was a really wild scene, and it was actually getting a little dangerous. I thought about going over by the bleachers to get out of everyone's way, but at that moment, the Mad Pantser struck again and nailed Rowley. I decided I was better off where I was. Every once in a while, a few latecomers would walk in and turn right back around when they saw what was happening in the gym. But at around 9 o'clock, Michael Sampson walked in holding hands with Cherry Bellinger. Michael was the boy Abigail was supposed to go to the dance with, but I guess his family obligation story was just a lie. And judging from the look on his face, I don't think he was expecting Abigail to be there either. After that, it was just a whole lot of drama. Michael took off and left his date behind, and Abigail spent the next half hour bawling her eyes out in the corner of the gym. I did what I could to help make Abigail feel better, but she kind of had a crowd around her, so I'm not sure she actually noticed. Right about that time, the senior center meeting wrapped up, and a few of the seniors started drifting over to our side of the gym and helping themselves to the refreshments. They went through the strawberries pretty quick, and then there was nothing for people to dip in the chocolate fountain. So kids started sticking their fingers directly in the fountain, and it was cornies all over again. Glug, glug, glug. One kid lost a contact lens in the chocolate fountain, and Mrs. Shear had everyone stand back so she could fish it out when it cycled back through. Since the meeting was over, Uncle Gary turned the music back up. But the old folks started making song requests, and the next thing you knew, our Valentine's Day dance was overrun by senior citizens. I just watched everything play out from my spot against the back wall, wondering why I'd even wanted to go to the dance in the first place. I was also starting to regret not wearing the body spray I found in Roderick's junk drawer, because Great Uncle Bruce's cologne was attracting people outside my age group. It was almost 10 o'clock, and Uncle Gary announced that the next song would be the last one of the night. When the music started playing, a few kids paired up and walked out on the dance floor as couples, which was the first time that had happened all night. I couldn't wait for the song to end, because this dance was a total disaster, and I just wanted to go home and play some video games so I could erase the whole experience from my brain. But just when I thought things couldn't get any worse, I saw Ruby Bird, and she was coming right for me. I didn't know if she was going to ask me to dance, or if I'd somehow done something to make her mad, but I did not want to end up getting bitten at a middle school dance. I looked for some way to escape, but I was trapped. Luckily, Abigail walked right out of the bathroom at that exact moment, and I grabbed her hand just before Ruby got to me. Abigail's makeup was a mess from all the crying, but I didn't really care. I was just happy to have an excuse to get away from Ruby. And to be honest with you, I think Abigail was happy to see me, too. So I led her to an empty spot on the dance floor. I'd never slow danced with a girl before, so I didn't know where I was supposed to put my hands. She put hers on my shoulders, and I put mine in my pockets. But that felt kind of dumb, so we met in the middle, and that seemed about right. Then I noticed something on Abigail's chin. It was a little red bump that looked exactly like one of Rowley's chicken pox. No. Before I say what happened next, let me just explain in my defense that I was already on edge about the whole chicken pox thing. But I admit, I may have overreacted a little. It turns out it wasn't chicken pox, though. It was just a pimple. When Abigail was crying, her makeup must have washed off her chin. Anyway, I know that now, but anyone in my shoes probably would have reacted the same exact way I did. But I don't think Abigail saw it that way, because on the ride home, she wasn't real chatty with me. When we pulled up to Abigail's house, Rowley walked her to the front door. That was fine with me, because it gave me a chance to finish off the rest of the chocolates. And after the night I just had, I was totally starving. Wednesday. A lot has happened since the Valentine's Day dance. A few days ago, Uncle Gary bought a bunch of scratch tickets with the money he made selling T-shirts, and one of his tickets was a $40,000 winner. So he paid Dad the money he owed him, wished me luck with the ladies, and moved out of the house. The other big news is that I got a full-blown case of the chicken pox. I can't say for sure how I got them, but I really hope it wasn't from Rowley, because I'm not that crazy about the idea of a bunch of Rowley's virus cells attacking my immune system. I'm pretty sure I didn't get the chicken pox from Rowley, though. I've seen him walking to school the past few days, and from what I can tell, he's been wearing his mom's makeup on his chin. So I think those red bumps might have been pimples, just like Abigail's. And speaking of Rowley and Abigail, I heard that the two of them are a couple now. All I can say is if that's true, it makes Rowley the worst wingman in history. I'm supposed to stay home from school for at least a week. The good news is that with everyone out of the house, I can take long baths without anyone bothering me. Ah. But I will admit all that floating around isn't as great as I remember it. And after just an hour, your skin gets all wrinkly. So don't ask me how I lived that way for 9 months. Plus, I get a little lonely being by myself all day. Or at least I think I'm alone. Today I had a fresh towel next to the tub, and when I opened my eyes, it was gone. So, either somebody's messing with me, or Johnny Cheddar is at it again.
The End. You've been listening to Diary of a Wimpy Kid, 7, The Third Wheel, by Jeff Kinney. Narrated by Ramon De Ocampo. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends NERDS, National Espionage, Rescue, and Defense Society, by Michael Buckley. Narrated by Johnny Heller. Combining all the excitement of international espionage and all the awkwardness of elementary school, NERDS, featuring a group of unpopular students who run a spy network from inside their school, hits the mark. With the help of cutting-edge science, their nerdy qualities are enhanced and transformed into incredible abilities. In this madcap comic caper, the nerds battle the hyena, a former junior beauty pageant contestant turned assassin, and an array of James Bond-style villains, each with an evil plan more diabolical and more ridiculous than the last. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So visit us at recordedbooks.com to learn about our latest releases and special offers. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.